Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love Fruit podcast. And today our guest is Lee Nelson.
Lee Hello.
Ethical High Raw Vegan since 2014. He is a father, husband, environmental advocate, holistic health coach, yoga instructor, Tai Chi teacher, Reiki practitioner, and dream interpreter. Lee has studied and completed courses in metaphysics, natural hygiene, and nonviolent communication. His hobbies include running, reading, and gardening. And I think, Lee, you've got like the best email address ever, supremelifeforce@gmail.com.
Yeah, thank you.
Where does that
come from? That comes from Tai Chi.
Okay, yeah.
So Tai Chi is it's a Chinese word. And the way that I interpret Tai Chi is supreme life force. The Tai can mean supreme or ultimate, and Chi means life force.
And what does that mean in the philosophy of Tai Chi? Like, what does that actually represent?
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of the goal or the practice of Tai Chi is ultimate life force. It's to be your ultimate true self, to be and express your ultimate true self, to live fully. Right. Yeah.
Right. I've been practicing a martial art called Aikido for many years. So
yeah,
there's some kind of similarity there. And that's the thing that interested me about it was I was quite interested in this idea of the esoteric energy thing, you know, mm-hmm. I'm kind of interested in exploring that and seeing if there was any reality to that. And I think I've only done a few classes of Tai Chi, but I feel like this is probably trying to hit on something similar or trying to cultivate something similar. And what have been some of your experiences with that before we get into all the
That's
kind of interested in this topic.
Yeah, Tai Chi is pretty deep in my story. Tai Chi is where I first felt that energy, what you're talking about. After practicing daily for about 6 months, I started to feel something. I was like, what is this? What is going on here? Started feeling the energy flowing through my body. And that is what got me into Reiki and some other things, is feeling the energy through Tai Chi. So it's part of my daily practice. One of my warm-ups is doing a Tai Chi. For me, it's more about the health and the energetic aspect. Tai Chi, you can use it martially, but the roots of Tai Chi is for health and well-being.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being in like Chinatown in New York and seeing people practice Tai Chi and older people practice
right.
stuff in the park. Yeah. I like that. I think it's really cool. Yeah. And you mentioned there the 6 months of practice. So how do you think about that's what you call a supreme life force? Like, is it something that is within us that we cultivate, or is it something that we try and tap into and allow it to flow?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think right. ultimately it is the ultimate supreme life force, the divine source, right? What we might call God, I believe is everything, is everywhere, in everything, everyone. But you can also kind of break it down to where it's like, this is my life force. And my life force is also connected to my soul and my higher self.
Yeah.
And so that is, you're connecting into something deeper, but I can also cultivate that and express it. And my personal life force here in this human existence can grow and manifest.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was speaking to a guy recently who was talking about having like a Kundalini awakening, and this essentially this sort of experience for about 4 years, where he had this energy going through his body, and in his words, kind of blowing all his internal circuits, and kind of like you talked about the idea that we've got all these filters in us that sort of stop us from maybe experiencing certain things, or they hold us back, or they make us think in certain ways, or they and he just talked about how some of these would just disappear.
Yeah.
And I think about that sometimes with the idea of like this idea of energy or this flow of energy, that we kind of we have this access, there's access to it, but we sort of are blocked, or we hold back from it in some way, or we kind of our mind has so many fixed ideas or whatever it is that kind of manifesting more.
Yeah, I believe very in a very similar way that for example, if we are eternal souls, and so we're a soul before we come into this human experience, and that soul is much grander, right? Has access to a lot more awareness and a lot more just everything. And so, but as we choose to come into this human experience, we say, okay, I'm going to forget all that. I'm going to forget that. I'm going to act as if this is a brand new experience. And we come in here with this kind of clean slate to have this experience. And then, yeah, we come into the human, the societal, all these structures and these mind things that kind of block us from receiving our all of this divine inheritance that we you know, is our divine inheritance that we can tap into. But that's part of why we come here, is to do that, to move through all of these structures and get back to our true self.
Interesting. So let's get to your story a little bit.
Sure.
Is there anything you'd like to say about yourself in introduction? Because I read out a little bit there, but anything else you want to say before we get into more of your story?
No, yeah, I wrote that for you as the introduction. Yeah.
So did you grow up in a mainstream mainstream kind of a diet, regular kind of upbringing?
Yeah. So yeah, and this is actually pretty interesting. I grew up on a dairy farm.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up in, you know, the traditional US, you know, the SAD type diet, eating a lot of dairy products. I grew up in a more rural area, so it's pretty rural, on a farm, kind of out in the middle of nowhere in California on the West Coast.
Oh, wow.
And it, you know, now looking back, you know, I've been an ethical vegan for over 8 years, and looking back, I see this like really disconnect with myself, with my younger self.
Okay.
Because I loved animals. I've always loved animals, always. You know, and I would go to the dairy farm, and I would pet the cows and be with them and talk to them, and then I'd go home and eat them. And you know, and when I look back now, I'm like, that is so sad. But that was the indoctrination. You know, everyone was telling me we had to eat meat in order to survive. And you know, I didn't know any vegetarians or vegans until I was in my 20s. I just it didn't even register as that was an option.
Yeah. So when you growing up, did you have any health issues at all?
Let's see. I have contacts now. I had glasses when I was pretty young, like first grade, really young, had glasses.
It's funny because whenever I ask people about that, they never say anything about their eyesight.
Yeah, well, this is one thing that's big to me. Do you know Dr. Bates?
I've heard of the Bates.
The Bates method. Yeah. I've used the Bates method, and I've improved my eyesight quite a bit. And I think, eating mostly raw, you know, has helped a lot with that too.
Right. Yeah.
And in my metaphysics training, we do eye exercises too. Yeah. So I had, let's see, I mean, I got sick like a regular kid. I didn't have any big health issues. Yeah, nothing major.
Sure.
I would get sick here and there. I used to get like fevers during the summertime, some kind of weird things, but nothing major.
Did you have any kind of religious upbringing?
Yeah, my family was pretty pretty religious in the Bible. Like we would read the Bible a lot, and pray pretty often, but we didn't go to church a lot. So we had it was a more spiritual upbringing where we were trying to have a more connection with Jesus. So in a way, yeah, it was, kind of the traditional Christian upbringing, but it wasn't super strict. We didn't go to church a lot.
Yeah. And so what kind of came first? Was it your interest in the sort of metaphysical, spiritual side of things, or was it the transition towards veganism, or did it all come? How did that all work for you?
Spiritual came first. So when I was 23, 24, I got married and got divorced. And when I got divorced, that was a huge shake up for me.
Within 1 year?
Yeah, I was only married for 8 months. Yeah.
Right.
That was huge for me because I was like, well, I'm going to go to hell now. She left me, my ex-wife, she left me, and I was like, should I still be faithful to her? What should I do?
Right.
And so I started like researching a lot of different religions and a lot of different things. And I kept asking myself these questions because I had a lot of friends who were not Christian, who were Muslim, who were Wiccan or kind of new age spirituality or different religions, different things. And I was like, you know, these people are really genuinely nice, kind people. Why would they go to hell? Like, that doesn't make sense to me, right? and I just did a lot of research and a lot of praying and a lot, and I came across Edgar Cayce. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
I love Edgar Cayce. I started reading all of his stuff and I was like, oh, this really made sense. And for me, it kind of blended the religion with kind of the new age spirituality and some of these other religions that I started looking through, and kind of Buddhism and some different things. And so I kind of developed this, maybe my own take on spirituality. And then I got into metaphysics, which, you know, really took that to a whole new level. So that came first before the veganism. Yeah.
What do you mean by metaphysics?
So metaphysics, physics is the study of reality, of physical reality, right? Metaphysics is the study of non-physical reality. So it's studying of the mind and of kind of the universal laws of the way things work. In metaphysics, we learn about meditation, how to meditate, what does that mean? We also learn about dream interpretation. That's where I got my dream interpretation from, because we can use these laws of the mind and the way the mind works to interpret dreams.
Oh, wow.
And to get messages from our higher self.
Interesting. Yeah. Where do you go to train in that or learn that? Is that a specific school or?
Yeah, so there are different schools. The one that I went to specifically is called the School of Metaphysics, and it's based in Missouri. I did a distance training, and it was like a college, right? So it's really in-depth, intense, and there's a lot of practices to do with it. But the way it is I had one mentor, and I would receive lessons in the mail, and I would have these lessons. I would go over them, do the exercises, And I would have a mentor that I would call at least once a week, and we would email back and forth. And it took me a year and a half to do the first cycle. And that's all I did was first cycle. You can do four cycles. And if you do four cycles, that's like a 4-year university, and you can get a doctorate in metaphysics.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And who is it that came up with the course and everything and the syllabus?
The coursework is heavily influenced by Edgar Cayce.
Right.
I don't know who the originator was of it, but it's influenced by Edgar Cayce and his work. But it's been continued. It's grown upon that. And they also teach past life regression.
Any insight into the kind of exercises that you were put through for that?
Yeah. So some of the exercises have to do with dream interpretation. So you learn how to remember your dreams, write them down, interpret them. Some of the exercises are eye exercises, and some of them are mental. So it's like training your mind, right? So it's mental attention, focus. So for example, one of the exercises is looking at a candle flame. So you look at this candle flame and you do this exercise for 10 minutes and you look at the candle flame and you have a piece of paper and a pencil and you become the observer of your mind while you're watching this candle flame. You want to have a clear mind and not be thinking anything. But as soon as a thought or something comes into your mind, you make a mark on this paper and then you let the thought go and you focus again on the candle. So it's teaching you to how to focus your mind and clear your mind as well.
I like that. It makes me think about how easy it is for us to become distracted by almost anything. And I've been trying to sit down and get very focused on working on various things recently. And I try and observe the different things that come into my mind or even the feelings in my body that are sort of trying to distract me away sometimes. And I like music. So I really love music, but I have to kind of let that go rather than, okay, I'm going to put music on in the background. Because you know that's kind of distracting sometimes, but yeah, no, that sounds really interesting, Lee. I've never heard about that school. I've always been interested in trying to find some. It's interesting, like find some like some actual, lessons like that or. I can't think of the word you used for it. Teachings or exercises, exercises that actually help you develop these things. So that's interesting. So
yeah, it's not really well advertised. they don't do a good job advertising, really. And you know, the website is not that great. Because they're so focused on the physical attributes of what you do, and it's all volunteer based. The whole school is volunteer based, all the teachers and everything.
Wow.
So some of the things like advertising get left out a little bit, but yeah.
Sure. So how did you start to make the other lifestyle changes then towards veganism, towards raw foods?
Right. So when I was, 26, 27, somewhere around there, I was working as an environmental chemist at a laboratory, and we had a health fair, and we had a chiropractor that came in there to the health fair. And this chiropractor, you know, when I was in line and I came up to him, he just looked at me and he's like, "Your neck is super crooked." So I started going to this chiropractor, and one of the first things he did, he's like, "Bend over and touch your toes." And I couldn't do it, you know, at 26, right? I was super inflexible. So I started stretching every day, and then I started working out. I started doing P90X. Do you know what P90X.
Yeah.
So I started doing P90X, loved it. My favorite video of P90X was the yoga video. So I got into yoga, loved yoga. So I'm in the gym and I'm working out a lot, and I'm like, you know, I'm kind of this typical skinny white guy, but I'm like, oh yeah, I want to get buff, right? I want to get big. Everybody tells me you got to eat more protein. You got to eat more meat. So I started eating a lot of meat, a lot. And in general, I started eating a lot of food in general. So I was eating close to like 6,000 calories a day.
Whoa.
And I wasn't getting big, you know, and I started feeling bad. I'm like, what is going on? I feel bad. I'm not getting big. This isn't working. What's going on? And then there was one night that was really a tipping point for me. So I was cooking ground beef on the stove, and the aroma of it, the smell of it just overwhelmed me. And I was overcome with a feeling of anguish of these cows of like, and I was like, I can't do this. I can't eat this. I can't do this. So I didn't eat it, but I was still in that space of everybody was telling me you have to eat meat to survive. I didn't know any vegetarians. So I became a pescatarian for 2 years, which is just eating fish and then, you know, vegetables, right? And that actually worked fairly well for me. But I was still like, something doesn't feel right. At that time, I also started dating someone who was a vegetarian. So then I was kind of like, okay, maybe there's this other way to go. But it was when I got into my yoga training and my Reiki training. When I was doing Reiki training, during that period of time, I was like, I'm gonna cut out all animal products. And I thought I would go back. I was like, oh, I'm just doing it for this like 3 month period where I'm doing this training. You know, because I grew up on a dairy farm and I had always drank a lot of milk every day. And I was like, oh, I'll go back to like vegetarian. But after 2 weeks without it, I didn't want it. I was like, nope, I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm done. and so then it was just, well, how do I be the healthiest on this vegan diet, right? Because right at first I started eating a lot of nuts, and that was not good. You know, eating a lot of nuts did not work for me. So I was just searching around, like, what do I do? How do you do this the healthiest? And I came across the 80-10-10, Doug Graham's book. And I went to one of his retreats in Washington, in, you know, on the West Coast in Washington.
Sure.
And I met Doug Graham and Grant Campbell and some of those older guys. And then there was also some young girls at this retreat in their 20s and 30s who'd been raw for like 5 or 10 years. But seeing all these people who are doing raw vegan and just the amount of energy they had, what they were doing, you know, Grant Campbell doing these super long races and Doug lifting these really big weights and everything. And I was like, okay, this looks like it's it. Doug's work in 80-10-10 really resonated with me, you know, because people are like, oh, that's so extreme eating raw. But then I'm looking at all these animals and saying, hey, humans are the only animals that are eating cooked food on the planet. So maybe we're missing something here, really. So yeah, that was kind of how I got into it. It took me a while to transition. I did like the raw till dinner, you know, raw till four for a while. And then was kind of back and forth between raw and having a little bit of cooked here and there. I've been mostly raw for almost ever since I've been vegan, because it didn't take me that long to figure out.
How did you actually come across the 80-10-10 book?
I think I just found it online, just searching.
Sure. Yeah. And what year was it you went to the retreat?
It was either 2014 or 2015, somewhere right in there.
Right, so quite far back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I went to, it was Doug Grant, it was the first one that he did on like family. It was something around family. And it was a shorter one. It was like 4 days. And I was like, okay, I can afford that. I can do that. He had a shorter retreat.
Cool. And I've seen you at Woodstock. I don't know how many times you've been there.
I've been there twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your impression of that event?
Yeah, I love Woodstock. I think it's a really great place to have community, because it's hard to find this style of community. So here in Michigan, this is really interesting. There is a raw foods group here, but it's not raw vegan. They do like raw milk, raw honey, raw weird stuff. And they, you know, they do high fat as well. And then there, I prefer the vegan community over the raw community if it's not raw vegan, right? There's just something about having the raw vegan community. But sometimes I don't know. There's also something around this whole idea of, and I think you talk about this too, of like the detox portion of it. And I don't know, there's another. Well,
that's funny, because what's interesting to me is that you found Doug and you found 80-10-10, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people that have the more spiritual side of themselves, they get into the detox thing because they see it as a path to sort of further their spiritual path. And sometimes that can be a bad thing, because they end up like, you know, getting into the detox mindset and kind of going down this path of maybe trying to eat less and less and all these kind of things that people sometimes fall into.
It's true. And I did that. I did it. I found Dr. Morse and I did a lot of his, you know, I did some of his dry fasting and some of his other stuff. And then I also, I went to Costa Rica and I did a 21-day fast with Lauren Lachman.
All right, cool.
And spiritually, yes, I had great spiritual, experience with that. But physically, it took me a while to recover. And just physically, I don't think fasting all the time is a great thing.
What was it you were actually doing? What was the regimen you were sort of doing?
What do you mean?
Were you fasting quite a lot from what you were saying there?
Through different periods. For example, I think I was following Dr. Morse for like 6 months or something. And yeah, I was fasting at least once a month for a couple of days and then doing it. A dry fast here and there, and I was doing periods of like mono mealing with only grapes for a while,
right?
And it's hard to eat enough when you're mono mealing. the fast with Lauren Lachman was a little bit different, because that was like, okay, here's this one fast, I'm going to do it this one time. And yeah, it's a big fast, but it has this purpose, right? And it, for me, it was a much more spiritual purpose. So to me, that's a little bit different. So
yeah,
if you feel spiritually called, do it one time, get it over with. And then you can have fasting as part of your routine. But I would say maybe 2 or 3 times a year. Like, don't do it every week.
Right.
Yeah.
So firstly with Robert Morse, like, did you do some of the herbs and things as well? Do you think there's
any? I did some of the herbs, yeah.
Does he actually encourage dry fasting? I didn't really think he encouraged it that much.
At least from what I remember, yeah.
Oh, really?
He does. Especially one of his proteges, I forget what her name is, but she really encourages it.
Hildy Larson?
Yes, Hildy. Uh-huh.
Do you know that she passed away recently?
No, I didn't know that.
She passed away about 6 weeks ago, maybe.
Oh, pretty recent, yeah.
It's interesting that you said that, because I interviewed her like a couple of months before, and she was, even on the interview, she was talking about like being in bed, not being able to get out of bed, and doing all this intense detox and stuff. And when I heard that she'd passed away, I my immediate thought, and this is something that I start to think about now, is when I hear about someone passing away that's like fairly young and healthy and is in this raw vegan community, is I wonder if they've been dry fasting, because it, yeah, can take that too far, and it really, in the wrong situation, is really dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm not sure 100% if that's what happened with her, but it seems like the last post she made prior to dying was like she was doing some kind of intense detox stuff, and she didn't really say what she was doing, but you know, I guess it could have been something related to dry fasting. I don't really know.
Yeah, it's sad. You know, and I did a lot of training around natural hygiene with Dr. David Klein.
Oh, wow.
I went through his training program, but he, you know, he died fairly recently as well.
Sure.
Which was really sad too. But he was big in fasting, but for a reason, right? Not just, you know, every day trying to detox kind of.
Yeah, my understanding with David was, I mean, I'd spoken to him a couple of times, and I always wondered why he was quite, not part of things anymore so much. Like, he wasn't at any of the festivals, and he wasn't very public, and he didn't have any videos and things like that. And I think that he was probably, from what I've heard from people that were close to him, that he actually wasn't very well, and his lungs had become injured, from what I've heard, from breathing in this stuff, diatomaceous earth, that he had an experience with that. It damaged his lungs almost irreparably, and he obviously lived quite long after that, but he never quite regained his health after that, and his death involved pneumonia, I think, some kind of complication with respiration or pneumonia. So, yeah, it's really sad. And I was actually speaking to Doug Graham about it, and he said that when the lungs get damaged, they don't tend to repair. Like,
yeah,
you've just got so much. There's so many, whatever it is, the things in your lungs, like, they just get damaged over time and they don't repair. And if you damage them a lot, then there's no recovery from it entirely. So I don't know. Yeah. I'd heard that Dave might have been really suffering for quite a long time.
Yeah, especially from an outside source. Like, from an inside source, if you're doing something like smoking to damage the lungs, I think you can repair them. But when you're inhaling particles like diatomaceous earth, and they get stuck in there, yeah, there's not a great way for them to get out.
I don't know what the difference is. I think with smoking, it's like there's a buildup of tar, and maybe that can clean out. But I don't know, the diatomaceous earth, there must be a different type of damage. And
yeah,
it's one of those sad things as well, where it's clear to me that it seems to me that he was looking for a less damaging natural alternative to normal like insecticide that.
Yeah, he was trying to get rid of fleas for his cat. Yeah, and it's really pretty sad. And what I find the saddest part is that his school that he was building, it's all gone now.
Right. Yeah.
He was building this school, and it was and he was trying to build a place in Hawaii, like an actual physical school there too. He didn't build a legacy with it. He didn't have some of us who graduated from his school, I wish he had given us permission to help him run the school. Because now, you know, his family isn't doing anything with it.
Right. So let's go through natural hygiene then. And you probably learned a bunch from Doug as well, but what is natural hygiene? What are the main kind of philosophies that you've taken from it?
For me, the main philosophies of natural hygiene. So actually for me personally, like, I like to take natural hygiene and Maslow's hierarchy of needs and kind of put them together.
Nice.
So because it's not just the food, right? And I think that's a really important part of natural hygiene, is like, you've got to look at all your needs. And me as a new father, as a pretty new father, you know, sleep is way up there. So you got to look at your sleep, your routine, your daily routine. Are you getting enough sunshine? Are you getting enough clean water? And then some of the social needs as well. Do you have social support? Do you have activity? Physical activity? There's a lot of these needs that are on a daily basis. We need every day. So to me, that's really the basis of natural hygiene, is kind of looking at the human environment and what the human needs to thrive, the basic needs. Yes, diet is one of them, and we do focus on that a lot, but it's not everything, right?
Yeah. And to me, I think to really make a healthy lifestyle work, especially a raw vegan lifestyle, and do it long term, I think you need to incorporate some of these natural hygiene philosophies. I think you need to have these like rooted in your core. Like you have to really understand these things. And it's kind of like the center or the anchor. Like whenever you have doubts or worries, or you know, other people are doing other things, or you hear ideas about other different ways of living, or you know, see people do different things, you can always come back to these principles and these teachings of hygiene, and it always kind of makes you just have this center to come back to, of these very common sense, very practical, like totally make sense ideas, like you know, about the ideal kind of diet, about just the things about like the ideal diet for any animal is food that is like that it can eat in its raw state enjoyably, you know, just what else could that be apart from fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds? Like the rest of it kind of doesn't quite make sense. How was that experience with David, was that another thing by mail, or was it email, or was it online video, that process?
Yeah, so the school with David was online. That was also kind of like a college. That took me quite a few years to go through his program, and that was because which I love this about his program, is that you could go at your own pace. Right. So I did it pretty slowly. It was like writing papers, doing research, I studied the history of natural hygiene.
Nice.
And then I would have phone calls with David.
Oh, nice. You know?
And he's just one of the kindest guys I've ever known. And he was a great mentor to me. You know, and he helped me and my wife, Abby, through some tough times. And because when I was first looking for different programs, different ways to get like certified to be a health coach and to do this, I really liked the depth of his program and that you could do it at your own pace, but it was also one of the cheapest ones out there too, you know, and he really like worked with you and would help you out with everything. That was just an amazing experience.
Amazing. Yeah. He was a great guy. What was some of the stuff you studied? Did you read some of the like Herbert Shelton material?
Yeah.
Back to like, you know, Tilden and all that stuff, or
Troll
and all that? Or
yeah. So there was, you know, and again, I wish all that stuff was still there. I don't have access to it anymore.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. It's gone, which is really sad. But yeah, because Dr. Klein, what he did was he took this material from Shelton and some of the other ones, and then he would add to it. So it would have his own writing and their writing.
Sure.
And he would have all these papers. And then he had lectures too. So I could listen to lectures that he had or Shelton had or different ones. It was really cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Where has it went for you since then? So you've went on a period of learning and changing your diet and all that. And where are you at now? Are you trying to help others with that? Is it something that you just, it's just kind of a passion of yours or an interest, or is it not really something you're focused on at the moment? Where are you at with all that stuff?
Right. So I tried a little bit to make this kind of my full-time gig, right? It's just so hard, like the advertising and everything. I don't really like that. I don't like the advertising part. And so let's see, it's been almost four years that I've been married, and that completely changed my life. Like family, right? And so, and like I was telling you before before you started recording on this, I met my wife in Tennessee. We were living in Tennessee. And then we decided to move to Michigan for her to get her PhD. She is a therapist, and she's getting her PhD at MSU here in Michigan. And so she gets a stipend, but it's not that much. So I have to be the main person to make the money for our family. So I'm working for an environmental advocacy agency. It's kind of a startup business. There's only four of us in it. I'm helping build the website and build, basically we're doing a lot of research on everything environmentally related. And so we have one guy who's like a PhD in mathematician, and he'll get all the stats, all the data, and then he'll give it to me. I'll build a graph and be like, okay, this is how we're going to explain it in layman's terms, you know,
nice.
And show a graph. That is awesome because I work from home. I can do it from anywhere. And it's steady income. So I'm good with that. So the health coaching on the side, I do it with friends and family. And I feel like the more that I think about it and the more I do it, I'm like, this should really be taught in school. It should be taught to our kids. I don't feel great about asking people to pay a lot of money for this, you know? So it's kind of on the side, a gig.
Sure.
I teach yoga on the side. I teach Tai Chi. I do a lot of other things. You know, and now I have a 1-year-old son. So a lot of my time is taken up with that, you know. Yeah, I want to be a role model and mentor and have a really good relationship with him, which I do. And that is fantastic. I love being a father. You know, and I'm not, I've had to like come to grips with not being completely raw sometimes because, for example, we've had a lot of issues here with supply chain because of COVID and because of some other things going on. Like, you know, and it's Michigan, it's northern US. The fruit quality here is not great in general, but this winter has been rough. Like all the mangoes, you open them up and they're gray. It's just disgusting. And so I've had to add some cooked vegetables to some steamed vegetables for dinner sometimes. And it's not a big deal. I don't feel super, I know it's not ideal, but it's not bad, you know? And for me, the biggest thing is no fats. Yeah. For me, if I get too many fats in my system, it's not good. So steamed vegetables now and then, not a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on the fats. Like, I just think that almost straight away, even like, I even sometimes think about an avocado, like something just too much. Sometimes I feel like that's too much. I'm just like, oh, I just feel sort of brought down by it a little bit. And yeah, sometimes you want that. Maybe you're looking for that. But yeah, no, it's been great to speak to you, Lee, and get to know you a bit better. And if, let's say someone did want to reach out to you, maybe can they send you an email or something? Or
yeah, for sure. Which is that supremelifeforce@gmail. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Any last kind of thoughts? Any last?
Yeah, it's just the privilege to be here to share with you. Thank you for asking me to do this, to share. And for all that you do, I think it's great. You keep, you keep it interesting with all the different people that you do. It's not just the normal people, right? You know, because sometimes I think there's a lot of us who are just kind of living our normal life, right? And not really out. I'm not on YouTube anything. Yeah. Nobody can find me. So yeah, thank you for doing
that. I like that though. I like, because it's funny because I've contacted a few people and they've been raw vegan like 10 or 15 years or whatever. And I say to them, would you like to do an interview? And they go, I'm not really, my business is doing something else now. You know, they use some phrase like that. Say, oh, my business focuses in some other area. And I'm like, what are you talking about business? Like,
it's not for business.
I'm just talking, just really, I get it. Like, it might have been about that, or it might have been about like they were trying to get out there to get attention for themselves and everything. But I'm to me, it is interesting to find people that aren't doing it as a business, that aren't really necessarily pursuing it, that are doing it as a lifestyle. And because I think ultimately the whole point is not for it to become the obsession in your life, but for it to become kind of like you're saying, something that everyone should have known as a child.
Yeah, exactly.
Easily into their life. And then that being the foundation, the health and the energy you get from that being the foundation for the rest of your life to fuel all the other activities of life. And actually those things working together help a person to be even healthier, because if you're focused on, you know, how do I on other activities and getting better at those, and whether it's sports or whether it's in your work or even relationships and things, you want to feel at your best in order to do these things at your best. So that and more motivation to continue to eat well and improve how you eat and improve your sleep and things like that.
So right.
Feeds into your ability to pursue and achieve other things.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
And natural hygiene does talk about kind of having purpose in life, being a big part of health.
Right.
Productive work and...
Yeah, once you get those base needs met, then you can move up to the higher needs, the mental needs and the spiritual needs and the emotional needs. Yeah.
I love the Maslow's hierarchy and that kind of thing. I one time I was trying to I started the process of thinking about how would you bring together all these different psychology things, so to have this total understanding of how the human mind works, or how our motivation systems work and everything. Maslow's mm-hmm. needs is one part of that.
Yeah.
There's when I was at the Amazon Festival, one of the guys was talking about the Dunning-Kruger effect or something, and the various biases that the human mind has. So there's a certain series of typical biases that the human mind sort of is prone to. And I thought it'd be cool if you could work out all these different things and kind of learn them and have this really good understanding of your own mind. But there's a bunch of others.
Yeah, well, and you can just observe your mind, because different people grew up in different households and different structures. And we also have different personalities. So I think it is really important to observe your own mind, your own thoughts, and to be like, why did I think that? Why? Where is that coming from? Is that an original thought of mine? Did it come from someone else? Did it come from society? And just doing that, you really do get to know yourself a lot better, what your personal motivations are. And it's that's, I think that's more the way to go.
Well, thanks a lot, Lee, for taking some time. I look forward to seeing you again sometime. And I certainly would like to catch up with you another time and maybe do a second part to this. And
we'll sure.
With the other topics a bit more. But
yeah.
For the audience that are watching and listening, thank you for spending the time and giving us a bit of your attention to check out the Lovefruit podcast. And feel free to share this with others or comment on this, give us a like, a review, whatever you can do to help us would be nice. Any feedback, you can send any feedback to info@fruitbest.co.uk. And part of the reason that we have these podcasts to some degree is to help promote our festival, the UK Fruit Fest, fruitfest.co.uk. You can have a look at that if you like. But thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in another episode of the Love Fruit Podcast.